Thank you for coming on this very cold day. We are very happy to be here and to be able to talk to the media, to the public, about our experiences and also why we even did our action in the first place. So without further ado, I'm going to hear from the arrestees, as well as Stephen DiCaprio from Maclejohn Civil Liberties Institute. The Maclejohn Civil Liberties Institute recently just turned in a document to the United Nations Human Rights Council about the overall criminalization of homelessness here in the United States, and a lot of it was based, informed by the work that we're seeing happening here and the inhumanity we've seen happening here in the Bay Area. So without further ado, I will ask Rosa to come up.
My name is Rosa, and I'm a renter here in Oakland, and I work as a web developer. I was arrested for protesting to demand an immediate end to the Oakland City government's terror campaign against those in our community who have been forced out of their homes and onto the streets to make way for the wealthy. We demand an immediate end to the destruction of our unsheltered neighbors' property, an end to the demolition of self-built homes, and an end to the harassment, criminalization, and incarceration of our communities. As we peacefully demonstrated at Oscar Grant Plaza, protesters, as well as bystanders, were arrested and jailed with the outrageous bail of $5,000 per person to discourage us from continuing. However, we will not be discouraged from continuing our struggle to demand housing and dignity for all. While the Oakland City government terrorizes our unsheltered neighbors, developers and landlords profit from a housing market that pushes people onto the streets through high rents and private property rights backed by police terror. People, especially black people, are forced out of their homes to make way for those who can afford to pay more for housing. Homelessness is a symptom of an exploitative system that puts profits before people. The system that enshrines developers' and landlords' right to profit in the first place, off of stolen indigenous land. Homelessness in Oakland has increased by 47% since 2017. While there are more empty residences in Oakland than there are people without housing, and unprecedented millions have been spent to solve homelessness in Oakland, Mayor Libby Schaaf has claimed that the primary cause of homelessness in the city is a shortage of housing. In reality, Schaaf's job as mayor is not to house the unhoused, but to oil the machine that necessarily creates houselessness in the first place. The exploitative system that produces and distributes housing to further enrich the already rich instead of to fulfill human needs. Our city governments are instruments for the exploitation of the oppressed class, maximizing profits for landlords and developers at the expense of the rest of us. Because I see that our neighbors are terrorized for being homeless by the very forces that have taken their homes, I understand that the struggle of the housed and of the unhoused is the same struggle. Those of us paying rent we cannot really afford, those of us a paycheck away from being unsheltered, and those of us who can no longer find a way to afford to pay rent clearly share the same struggle. We see that the housed and the unhoused have a common enemy, and those becoming richer while the rest of us become poorer. This is why we unite as people of many backgrounds to take a stand against the continued terror of unsheltered people by the Oakland City government. We will continue our struggle so that we can begin to make possible a world where we are not criminalized for existing, where black and indigenous people may determine our own destiny, and where a home is guaranteed to every person. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Jasmine. I'm housing insecure, and I'm a musician from the Bay, and here are our demands. We demand an immediate end to evictions of curbside communities, demolitions of homes, towing of vehicles, people live in or store belongings in, including the upcoming evictions this week on Tuesday on Kirkham between 16th and 17th, and on Wednesday on 84th and 85th between East 13th and East 14th. We demand an immediate end to the destruction of curbside residents' personal property and survival gear. We demand the City Council direct the mayor and her administration 2 years ago to identify and make available at least 2 parcels of public land in each district to be used for sanctuaries, villages, or other community-led emergency approaches to support and shelter curbside communities. This has never happened, and it must happen immediately. No more fundraising for or building any more tough sheds. These programs are a waste of money, and they are not effective to meet the scale of the homeless state of emergency or the actual needs of curbside residents. We demand an end to market rate and above market rate development. The city must turn its attention to the neglected, deeply affordable housing development goals in the next year. We demand an immediate upgrade to all curbside communities with adequate porta potties, trash services, clean drinking water, solar power, and improvements to self-built homes. Due to his anti-homeless tendencies, his abuse of power, his complete disregard of the humanity and rights of curbside residents, his mismanagement of billions of dollars to go towards the solutions to homelessness, we call for an immediate dismissal of Assistant to the Administrator, Joe DeBreeze. Due to his deep anti-homeless biases and arbitrary decision-making that impacts the lives and well-being of Oakland's Funhouse, he cannot lead the approaches to solve this crisis. The immediate implementation of City Councilwoman Nikki Fortunato's best recommendations to align the city approaches to homelessness with a human rights lens. We demand the demilitarization of encampments and the immediate dissolution of the City of Oakland's encampment management team.
All right, my name is Anita Diaz-Morale. People call me Nita B. And this is our response to the city's public statement they put out in regard to the mass arrest and destruction of the Housing and Justice Village. My name is Nita B. I am a single mother, a writer, a dancer, a chef, a businesswoman, the program director of Maclejon Civil Liberties Institute, an event producer, activist, and organizer, and I am currently unhoused in Oakland. Of the more than 80 protesters who were present at the Housing and Justice Village, 30 were unhoused. Of the 22 arrested, 10 were unhoused. And 4 are housing insecure. We, the unhoused and housing insecure, human service staff never came to do their paid job of providing support and housing navigation. The city's public statement also claims it follows their policy to bag and tab our belongings. If this is true, this will be the first time in the past 3 years advocates have been tracking the Department of Public Works behavior during clean and clears, curbside evictions, curbside home demolitions, that they will have followed their policy. We have not been notified where our property is or how to retrieve our property. None of our property has been recovered, and multiple unhoused arrestees are without phones, IDs, and wallets. Once the sun had set, the police officers told us that we could have a bed at St. Vincent de Paul for the night. This offer continued until 11:30 p.m. However, to get a bed at St. Vincent de Paul, you must arrive at their facility at 5 p.m. We wanted to know why and how the special treatment was possible. Also, the 6 hours they were offering us was not adequate for any of our needs and did not offer any kind of stability. A protest camp was much more stable at a night St. Vincent de Paul. After St. Vincent de Paul, we would be forced to leave at 7 a.m. and carry our gear around all day. And for many of us, the lack of cleanliness, the chance of having our gear stolen, and the rude staff was not an environment that was adequate for safety or stability. The shelter system is broken. The city knows this. The homeless service providers know this, and the unsheltered know this. Yet the mayor wants to use millions of dollars to build more homeless shelters without drastically fixing the Portland system. Many of us have advocated and advised that if the city is set on shelter beds, then they should at least improve the existing system instead of wasting public funds in a system that recycles people in and out of the streets. And why should millions be spent on beds when those resources could actually be used to build permanent housing? The main push prior to the creation of the new homeless shelters was the Tough Shed scam. Tough Sheds do not work.
They do not improve the lives of the vast majority of people who are pushed through them. Much like the shelter system, a majority of people are recycled back onto the streets after spending 6 months to a year in the tough sheds. In addition, the mismanagement of the tough shed sites by nonprofits who are receiving $500,000 to run them is unacceptable. The Village of Maclejon Civil Liberties Institute has documented dozens of testimonies of abuse, punishment, loss of personal property, dismal conditions, harm and violence from former residents of the tough sheds. The tough shed program is merely a cosmetic approach that gives the illusion that something is happening, that something is being done, while making homeless residents, not the homeless crisis, disappear. The mayor and her encampment management team need to come clean. Approaching homelessness as a humanitarian crisis is not their priority. However, approaching homelessness as an eyesore to their profit-driven development plans is a priority that's making a handful of people very rich. The money is not reaching the people that has been intended to help. There are literally thousands of Oaklanders, mostly black, mostly born and raised in Oakland, living on the streets tonight. Meanwhile, for every one unhoused person, 4 residential units stay empty in Oakland. Meanwhile, 200 permanent housing units that have been approved to be built over the next 5 years for low-income housing will happen. Over that same time, 50,000 market rate and above market rates will be built. The city is lying. They have no intention to solve the affordable housing crisis or the homeless state of emergency. They have every intention of building for the rich white folks who don't live here yet while they leave the town to literally freeze to death on the streets.
Talking about
a deeper talk about how the city of
Oakland actually does treat
unhoused. Good morning. My name is Ayanna Johnson. I'm a single mother, an entrepreneur, a longtime taxpayer and voter, and I was born and raised in Oakland. I worked with and voted for Libby Schaaf. I survived the encampment management team's demolition to my emergency home while I was home. So Mayor Libby Schaaf has been lying to the public regarding city actions against unhoused Oakland citizens. She claims to have taken a compassionate and humane approach. Her current actions have been ineffective. Taxpayer and voter resources wasted on knocking down Oakland residents who need her help the most. Libby Schaaf has destroyed the youth of the community and the youth community built for me at the Housing Dignity Village almost a year ago today. I'm seeing her organizing to provide the same faith to my community now. She has met unhoused residents' attempts to create stability during a crisis with aggressive tactics, which is why, in addition to the Housing Justice Village demands, I'm seeking at this time to recall Libby Schaaf from office. Libby has often left the media and the voters in the dark, especially when they violate unhoused citizens' 4th, 8th, and 14th Amendment rights by illegally searching and seizing property, punishing and criminalizing unhoused residents for trying to survive while unhoused, and not giving unhoused residents the same rights and protections as housed residents. Libby and her encampment management team's actions have resulted in 5 separate ongoing civil rights lawsuits against the city of Oakland. Libby and her team's actions also earned the United Nations attention. Last year, the United Nations internationally recognized the city of Oakland as one of the top human rights violators and unhoused people in the world. What an embarrassing record to hold. Could it be why she does not inform the public or allow the media to display the current response tactic used against unhoused citizens? The demolition of miniature built housing and towing of unhoused vehicles and criminalizing her citizens, leaving them in total despair. These tactics trigger emotional, mental, and physical setbacks. Responses such as depression, PTSD, anxiety, and panic attacks are quite common. Imagine losing something you know as your residence. Now imagine how disruptive it is to your equilibrium when someone disposes your personal belongings. It also increases chances of losing employment or employment opportunities as well. The city is using resources that are not effective. We don't see our tax dollars hard at work for the citizens of Oakland who actually need it the most. In fact, she approved our tax dollars, $700,000 annual income, without proper protocol to a David Silver, a man directing her favorite nonprofit, Oakland Promise. He is not an Oakland voter nor a resident. While we see all our local people dying without housing in the street. All of Libby Schaff's solutions to the homeless crisis are temporary and don't match the size or need of this crisis. The main approach she has been pushing as a success after her tough shed. Not only does the manufacturer of tough sheds report that human inhabitation of their product will cause respiratory disease and cancer, but their mismanagement by nonprofits receiving $500,000 to staff them has resulted in dozens of testimonies of abuse, mistreatment, suffering, and harm. Why is the 2 years that Libby and Encampment management team had to access the unprecedented millions, there are no resolutions for permanent housing for Oakland unhoused demographic? Why over the next 5 years are only 200 units for low-income residents and over 50,000 housing units for the market rate and above? Libby's goal is to drive the longtime citizens of Oakland to relocate to alternative cities, while the city attempts to bring a new market to Oakland and still driving out national sports teams as well. City council recommendations have been ignored, especially for public land sanctuaries, village land, and immediate alternative to traditional permanent housing. We are tired of lack of assistance from unhoused and racial disparities felt throughout Oakland community, while OPD makes a whopping $30 million in overtime pay annually in the last 3 years. This can no longer be ignored. We don't want any more Libby's Oakland or her promise. Please help me recall Libby Schaff as mayor, and it will open doors to new prosperity and hopefully get us a professional sporting team back into rotation. This Tuesday and Wednesday, Libby Schaff plans to use more of our tax dollars to destroy curbside communities in Kirk County. That's between 16th and 18th in West Oakland, Joaquin Miller Park, and in East Oakland on 83rd and 84th on East 14th, and the rim. The city plans on taking their homes with no permanent alternative, destroy a tight-knit community that lean on each other to survive, and erase any stability they created for themselves. Their idea of housing is in an overnight shelter that city reps would die before bringing themselves or their children or families to be placed. I personally challenge the city to stay overnight at any of these facilities they attempt to place the unhoused. The Housing Dignity Village provided a safe shelter space for myself and other single mothers of Oakland and our families. Her greed took that away. We demand the city of Oakland turn our demands into policies that are implemented and enforced. And I'll call upon the community to join the recall effort. If anybody wants to go ahead and sign, we already have that effort. It's on the front table. Thank you guys so much.
Next up, we'll hear from Hayat Jalal. He'll be speaking on specifically how gentrification has impacted the Black community.
Briefly, because it goes on. All right. My name is Hayat Jalal. I'm a 46-year-old Black Seminole, son of the Black Panthers. Because of them, I've been president of a nonprofit corporation. I've had two businesses, father of six, founding member of First They Came to the Homeless, member of the Village, carpenter, published poet, artist, and organizer, who's currently couch surfing and open, thanks to the destruction of my tent. Homeless, like victims of unfair housing practices introduced to Oakland when Jerry Brown became mayor, they denied public housing to families who had members who was a felon. I am part of the 70% homeless Black population in Oakland, unable to find peace between the rent hikes and the camp closures. For the past 20 years, Blacks in Oakland have lost their homes to abatement laws, fines to the courts, and bail bonds. Generations and families that have only known Oakland as home have lost the only anchor and the only communities that they have known before gentrification hit Oakland. However, gentrification is not nothing new. It's just a different name for the same old colonial racism. The same systematic displacement and shaming of targeted population. We minorities who make the majority of the population here in America have had our families and lives torn apart by unjust laws. Gang injunctions made our youth targets for wearing the same gear or the same hats. Schools in Oakland are closed down and our children are harassed, cited, and arrested by police, given criminal charges for not being in school, and our families lose strength and we're made unwhole and broken because of this process. Our schools are still being closed and housing block and housing block as an inhumane tactic of socioeconomic oppression of Oakland, and police are used like assassins and pawns in this war to maintain poverty, not to fight against it. Our schools are still being closed, while police receive new equipment to hunt down in the street like prey. Affordable housing continues to be denied while private industry builds prisons and above market rate housing. Oaklanders still want decent housing fit for the shelter of human beings. And if the government landlords will not give decent housing to the red, black, brown, and yellow communities, then as my parents and other Black Panthers taught us, housing and land needs to be made into cooperatives, taken if necessary, so that our communities, with the people's aid, can build and make a decent housing for its people. The civil rights struggle has helped inspire the fight for human rights almost everywhere in the world. Black people once led that struggle. The assassination of our leaders and the flooding of our streets with drugs, and the lack of adequate jobs and education, the accessibility of adequate housing, the decimation of the Black economic base, all destroy our communities, and it's cost us decades of cultural and generational attacks on red, yellow, brown, and Black people. The struggle still continues. Still to this day, no matter the jury, no matter the administration, we're not judged by peers nor given proper government representation. The struggle continues. In the silence of protesters, silencing of protesters, crystal meth and heroin epidemic currently flooding our communities, the closure of our schools, the lack of access to jobs, the lack of adequate housing, Libby Schaff and Joe DeBree have repeated history, and they have no compassion nor capacity to be humane. They have proven this in their actions during this emergency crisis of homelessness. And the current administration do not care about the culture or the people of the real Oakland, the Black, red, brown, and yellow working class. And we need to do something about that. We insist that the city council turn the housing justice village demands into policies that are implemented and enforced. And we insist that the people of Oakland move forward forever. The government is obviously not for us or with us on this struggle. And I'll add to that the fact that we live in a democracy that requires that someone remains on the bottom. It requires that somebody remains poor, that somebody can be made a scapegoat. And it's one of five forms of businesses still practiced in Nigeria. And it has nothing to do with the growth, sustainability, or for the helping of the humanity in any way. And truthfully, we all need to get rid of it and come up with something better. Thank you.
Next up, we will have Genevieve speak about the treatment of the arrestees.
Good morning. My name is Genevieve Southwood, and until recently I was a nonprofit event organizer. Currently, I'm unemployed, on disability insurance, and housing insecure, sleeping on a friend's couch in West Oakland. My presence at Oscar Grant Plaza last Sunday was in solidarity with all unsheltered folks everywhere, as well as for all of us that are one missed check or emergency away from joining you. Our traumatic arrests should be seen as a direct indictment of the state, the city of Oakland, the Alameda County Sheriff's Department, and the Oakland Police Department's abuse of power and the law. In violation of our constitutional rights, 22 of us, 10 of us who were unhoused, were arrested for exercising our First Amendment rights by the Oakland PD on the morning of Monday, November 25th. 60 Oakland police officers, an excessive number, waited for media agencies to leave Oscar Grant Plaza that evening. Then they illegally entered tents locked from the inside without a warrant, dragging us from them, inflicting trauma to all and injury to some, including what may be permanent shoulder damage to one of our organizers. When our sister demanded that her pat-down not be conducted by a male officer, the responding female officer crossed the line and researched a point of molestation. From inside my tent on the plaza that night, I heard my neighbor screaming in pain as she was physically removed from her tent, while other voices yelled for the cops to stop hurting her and to let her go. Eventually, I heard a voice identifying themselves as Oakland Police directly outside my tent, and I was requested to step out. I asked if they had adequate housing available, and they offered me a bed at St. Vincent de Paul for less than 6 hours, with no assistance beyond that. Not only is this not adequate, nor housing, but by any means, but what I heard from the experiences of other binary, non-binary folks that is not safe or welcoming space for gender non-conforming humans. After being searched and cuffed, we spent some time on the plaza steps awaiting transport to Santa Rita. While we waited, we watched DPW throw our tents and everything in them into dump trucks and drive off. Laptops, backpacks, last mile transportation, prescription meds, cell phones, cash, bank cards, and wallets. easily several thousand dollars worth of our lives and livelihoods, and all of it is still missing. None of us were given claim receipts or information on how to retrieve our property. Even one of our housed allies is still having difficulty locating it for us. Our trans sisters were misgendered, separated, and subjected to cruel and unusual treatment, to the point of one of them being dressed out in reds, meaning they were deemed high risk, simply because their pronouns didn't match their outward appearance. This high-risk designation also placed them in solitary confinement for the majority of their stay, which can be extremely traumatic. Our only black brother, arrested Ayat, was dressed out in yellow and put in medium security, which insinuates to other incarcerated folks and jail staff that he wouldn't back down from a fight. The rest of us were processed through without too much hassle, other than the expected psychological abuse. We were given meals and barely passed as food. The sheriffs did their jobs and told us to shut up, a lot. They seemed 50% professional, about 50% condescendingly snarky. Processing us through Santa Rita taught us a lot, including that by arresting 22 protesters without real cause, the jail's processing system was so backed up, weekenders and others being processed out were hung up for hours in the backlog, violating their due process rights as well. Criminalizing the unhoused is illegal, immoral, unjust, and inhumane. The City of Oakland and Mayor Schaaf's office, as well as the OPD, should be held accountable for the violation of our rights and the rights of all unhoused Oakland residents. Thank you.
Before I introduce the next speaker, I just wanted to say that we were very mindful about wanting to utilize this space, not only to push forward what our original vision was and our original demands, but to also raise up the experience of those who are unhoused. There's a pipeline that goes from homelessness to the prisons back to homelessness, and we wanted to raise that reality up. Also, the fact that so many women that, at least, you know, in the women's part of Santa Rita that we met were homeless, and that everyone there totally got what we were doing and they supported what we were doing. And we want to thank Libby for actually putting us in jail because it gave us an opportunity to do political education trainings in jail. The two adverse possession trainings talk about human rights. Informed the women that there was a strike happening next door in the men's prison. They didn't even know that that was happening. So I want to introduce Jasmine again, and she's going to talk more about the conditions that we witnessed the Folsom prison enduring.
When I was in Santa Rita, I met several women who had been arrested for warrants they didn't even know about, even after following up with the police. Some cases more than once. One woman who was booked around the same time we were had just gotten home from work, only to find that the police had beaten her to her own house and arrested her on the spot for a warrant she didn't know about. Her boyfriend immediately posted her bail and waited outside from 4 a.m. past 11 a.m. while she sat in the holding cell. While in the transfer room, I met a woman who was a weekender, which meant she had a prearranged release time every Sunday with the court, so that she could get to work. Jail guards kept ignoring her and kept her there for hours after her scheduled release time. Another woman had been sitting in the transfer room for 7 hours before I got there and was also supposed to be released. We kept getting responses such as, "We need to find her paperwork first," even though she had it in her hands. While I was in my pod, I learned my soulmates had not eaten between 6 a.m. and 3 p.m. and hadn't been outside in multiple days. My cellmates described the emotional abuse they received and even pointed out which guards smuggled in different drugs. When we did eat, it was bologna and nearly stale bread, maybe a tangerine and powdered juice, which, again, shouldn't even legally pass as food. Sometimes you wouldn't even receive a cup for your drink. There were no trash cans or toilet paper in the holding cells. There was no privacy either. Once one of us was using the toilets and another imprisoned protester stood up to give them privacy as a guard walked in, the guard threatened to tase the prisoner who stood up. This kind of verbal abuse and threats were common. Meanwhile, on the men's side, they had become tired of being abused and faced unfair labor conditions to the point in which they started a strike. Until we told them about the strike, the women's side of Santa Rita had no idea about the men's organized resistance, but I'd been given all the men's duties while their complaints went ignored. They were in completely separate worlds.
Good morning. My name is Ray. I am a non-binary artist and activist currently attending art school in Oakland. I use they, them, theirs, or any gender-neutral pronouns. My work focuses on trans existence, living with depression, and healing from PTSD. I will be speaking today on the treatment of LGBTQIA+ arrestees. Given the deep intersections of transphobic and anti-homelessness violence embedded in city and national policy, it left no one surprised that at least half of the 22 Housing Justice Village arrestees late Sunday night were trans people, nor was it surprising that we went on to deal with a number of human rights violations as trans people once in the county's jail. Law enforcement verbally harassed us, jeering at our pronouns and names, saying we looked like the sex we were assigned at birth and therefore should be treated as such and housed with that sex. We were also forced to answer questions from the jail nurse and the officers that processed us for housing about if we had gender identity disorder, an outdated, now scientifically disproven classification that was taken out of the American Psychological Association's Manual of Mental Disorders 7 years ago. It is unprofessional and blatantly transphobic for Santa Rita Jail to be still using this language and assigning it to inmates. Law enforcement in jail, as trans siblings have survived for years, particularly violated trans femme and trans women arrestees' human rights. One trans femme arrestee, a bystander at the protest caught completely off guard when arrested, was severely targeted by law enforcement. After refusing to be searched by men, they had their clothes cut and ripped off of them while alone in a cell with four male officers. They were later put into male high-security housing, putting them at especially high risk for harassment and assault. They were also held alone in an empty cell with no toilet for an entire day. Another trans femme arrestee was held in solitary for the entire night and day and given no bed. Forcing trans people into solitary confinement is a psychologically abusive policy. Both of these arrestees are also unhoused people. According to a 2014 survey conducted by the American Foundation for Suicide Prevention and the Williams Institute at UCLA Law, 60 to 70% of trans people in the U.S. have reported being physically and or sexually harassed by law enforcement, and 68% have experienced homelessness. Another study by the Williams Institute in 2012 found that 40% of homeless youth were LGBTQIA+. Homelessness is an issue that disproportionately affects LGBTQIA+ individuals, particularly trans people. Law enforcement and the prison system's explicit violations of trans people's human rights is unacceptable. We demand an end to the city's deliberate, cruel, and inhumane treatment of Oakland's unhoused trans residents. The city's actions filter low-income, black and brown trans people into jail and out again onto the streets, in a never-ending street-to-prison pipeline that leaves people with nowhere to go. This logic is deeply twisted, and again, Libby's policies are inhumane and unacceptable. Thank you.
So we had unhoused folks from other cities come and join us in solidarity, Berkeley in particular, with the Hear Their camp, and of course they came for the homeless, because you know the struggle that we have faced here is a struggle that they're facing in Berkeley, is a struggle they're facing in Frisco, is a struggle they're facing around the world. And we recently, some of us recently had an opportunity to meet an unhoused woman from Malaysia who was doing the same exact work that we're doing here. The State Department gave her a fellowship to come to California and Washington, D.C. so she could study how well the United States deals with their homeless. And she was like, actually, it's the same. It's terrible. And so this is an international crisis, and what each of the governments, whether it's Oakland or Malaysia, are using upon the unhoused people is the same tactics of inhumanity and cruelty and not solving the problem. So I want to introduce Juan with the Hear Their encampment that came for the homeless to share some thoughts.
Hello everyone, thank you for showing up. My name is Juan, I'm currently unhoused. I'm part of First They Came for the Homeless, and I desire to hear their protest camp in South Berkeley. Today I want to make two statements. One is homeless have no permanent addresses. The second one is solidarity. So I'm currently in a house. My ID says that I have, I currently use a hack address from Berkeley, but that's not my permanent address. The reason why a house folks don't have any address is because we constantly get shuffled around, from being told to move along, from sleeping in doorways of shops, to being constantly evicted and harassed by the city government. And house folks, they move from one city to the next. And about solidarity. So, I kind of reside at the Here There camp in Berkeley. I came to Oakland to support the initiation of the protest from the Village and East Oakland Collective, because we're fighting the same struggle. There are groups from Berkeley that also supported the protest on the 24th, which is Berkeley Friends on Wheels and the Where Do We Go campaign from Berkeley. When I was in jail, it was really stressful, but I had in mind that there are a number of us in the same institution as me. And also there are comrades outside coordinating for a bail. So that gave me a sense of camaraderie and solidarity. If you have any more questions about this, you can ask me after this. Thank you.
And we'll wrap up the statements with Stephen DiCaprio of the Mackinac Civil Liberties Institute. The Mackinac Civil Liberties Institute, part of the work, I'm the program director of that organization. Part of the work we do is reporting directly to the United Nations Human Rights Council and 25 different committees, especially because the Trump administration has refused to do so, and he's the first president in the U.S. to actually do that. So the work that we've been doing has been to collect the testimonies and the experiences of the people most impacted by the human rights abuses here in the United States, whether it be about racism or discrimination of women or torture used in prisons, or the discrimination against black folks, et cetera, et cetera. And so the most recent report that just got turned in by Stephen is around the criminalization of homelessness here, which is very timely with what's happening across the country. And a copy of that is where Talia is sitting. So if people want to see a copy of the report, you can get a hard copy of it. Welcome.
Yes, Nita B is the program director for the Mickle-Jaws Civil Liberties Institute. She has a lot of titles. That's one of them. My title is executive director or interim executive director. We are hiring, by the way, to replace me on step down to January 31st of 2020. I'm going to join the board, so we're going to continue working on these issues. Nita B is going to continue as the program director. So if anyone wants to apply for that position, go to our website, mclihumanrights.org, the job announcement's there. You know, if I was to go into someone's home and, you know, kick them out of their house and just tear the house down and that person died of exposure, I would be charged with murder. And something, you know, when I studied law, you know, they won't give me a law license, but I studied law and I cannot wrap my mind around how is this not murder? Is Libby Schaff not murdering people? When you go into an encampment and people are sheltering themselves from the elements, which is necessary for survival, I mean, we all need to sleep, and we all need to be sheltered from risk of exposure. When she and her minions go into these camps and steal people's tents and then kick them out into the elements, how is that not murder? How is that not mass murder? So, the right to life is the most fundamental right we have. A human being has a right to be alive. I feel like the fact that I even have to say this is insane. Like, what kind of world are we living in where I have to actually get out and say we have a right to be alive? Like, that is life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. That's like life is first, liberty is second, and then happiness pursuing it at least. Third, this is universal. I don't think of any kind of legal framework in which being alive is not a fundamental right. So that's something that we address in the report to the UN Human Rights Council, and Nita B and I are going to work to get, with support from this community and communities that are compassionate about this issue, a delegation of people who are unhoused, who are currently experiencing these issues, to talk to the UN Human Rights Council and to tell their stories to the Human Rights Council in Geneva. So that's going to take a lot of doing, but we're going to have to make this happen. The other right is to not be tortured. Under Martin B. Boise, criminalizing homelessness is prohibited by the Eighth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution, which is the prohibition against torture. Sleep deprivation is well established as a form of torture, and the way homeless people are treated in Oakland is torture. We discussed that in this report. There's some legal framework, Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which has been reframed as the International Covenant on Civil and Political Rights and the International Covenant on Economic and Social Cultural Rights. These are the treaty frameworks for human rights. And basically, there's a lot of treaties, and it gets more expansive, but the right to life is fundamental under the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, and also the both treaties, civil and political rights, and also economic and social and cultural rights. The right to be free from torture, of course, is guaranteed under UN human rights law, that the U.S. has signed. And also the right to housing is under the International Covenant on Economic, Social, and Cultural Rights and the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So, first and foremost, people have a right to be alive. Secondly, they have a right to not be tortured. But thirdly, people have a right to housing. People have a right to a home. So we're so far removed from compliance with the norms of human rights law that we're talking about whether or not it's okay to kill people when we should be talking about how are we going to provide housing for everyone. Low income, no income housing. That should be the conversation. And so when Libby Schaff and her people come to an encampment and think anything other than how can I help you, they're violating our rights, they're violating the Constitution, and they're violating universal human rights law. They're just violating basic principles of being human. So when you see people in need, if you're not gonna help, just leave. Don't mess with it. Just leave people alone. But they come in and say, how are we going to get rid of these people? And that is a criminally murdery kind of mindset. So we want to take a look at this. We talk about it at great depth, but we have a legal analysis at least, and we have some stories in here. So and hopefully we'll have more stories in Geneva, and we'll really bring this home and show Libby Schaff and every local, state, and federal governments in the U.S. for what they are, which are human rights violating, inhumane people who need to change their policies.
Thank you. Even made up the new word, murdery. Nice. So we want to open the floor up for any kind of questions. We'll take what you got. Yes, Mike Lee, the back.
Yeah, I'm very familiar with Saturday's process, and I'm wondering, out of 22 people, it kind of astounds me that nobody will go on freezing all the And I'm wondering, you guys were going for classification, were any of you considered for a while, at any point at all?
Even with people having mattresses on the floor, because of overpopulation, no.
Right. No. And I'm just wondering if anybody was considered for overpopulation. I'm looking at this population, and from what I know, for the people arrested, I was actually shocked that, number one, they took me all to Santa Maria, because normally on this type of charge, it's a site in the least, you know. Second thing that shocked me was the amount of bail. I mean, I almost fell over. There's no way you get a $5,000 bail. I've never, I mean, I've done some pretty gnarly stuff. I've never gotten a $5,000 bail. You know? So that was what I was wondering, because one of the arguments that came to me in court was unreasonable bail was a violation of the Eighth Amendment. You know? I mean, I'm looking at people here that are housed, especially, who have a stable address, and they have ties in the community. I mean, a security threat, and there's no violence involved in this charge. Why is it that you weren't extended to war? Because of the fact that Santa Rita is, I think, about 20 to 30% over crowded. There are people sleeping in the hallways with no mattresses, and that's pretty much right now.
And because of the
yeah, I would say I agree with Mike's assessment of, you know, we really feel like we were targeted because, I mean, I've been part of protests and demonstrations and taking over of buildings and shutting down bridges and et cetera, et cetera. And anyone who has been detained is cited and released. So what has happened to us is something, the only time I've seen that happen here is when Black Lives Matter shut down the West Oakland BART station. They were hit with felonies, but they didn't even, I don't think they even spent the night in jail. They were charged, but they got out. They didn't have to spend the night in jail. And there was one other instance that came to mind, I'm forgetting.
The IAD, when Black Lives Matter took over, the IAD, and all those people were actually pulled off and charged with by the CHP, that was a state felons that they were charged with. And those people on site were processed on site and cited their release.
And cited their release.
But, they,
that's right.
But they, in this type of a situation, in a clearly a nonviolent protest, you see a $5,000 bail. I mean, not even the WTO, most of them were captured, who wound up with $5,000. We have some people that captured actually in the act of breaking 19 witness. And they were sad to release on the spot. So I've never heard, I mean, I'm 64 years old, so I'm a child of 60. I've never seen the kind of business and security. And to me, it's a progression of policy when they have, because they started out by simply asking people to move and push them off the sidewalk. Then they went to actually tear down these self-made homes. Third level now they can take it to, because they're physically attacking with these people. And it's really disturbing the trans people going into Santa Rita and using self-empowering experience. But I can just imagine what happened, because the automatically is a security threat, according to the process. And yes, you will go into a red suit, and yes, you will get some solitary compliance.
One green is they also put you in the middle of the sort of the ground strand. They'll put you in the middle of the middle.
Green. This is their new model of criminalizing homelessness. Like, they don't stay in the gray area, but this is the way they criminalize homelessness. They're not supposed to. It's supposed to be illegal as per Boise. But this is what criminalizing homelessness looks like. And this is why we're here at this panel, to show the world what it looks like. And that is actually, it's starting to get redundant now. So now we have to take action. So that's why we're here in the first place, to show our model of what criminalizing homelessness looks like in all aspects.
There is definitely an escalation of the part of the city and the practices they're using. And I was thinking this morning, what if that was big after this wheelchair? Would they separate me from this wheelchair and be
in
the
hands?
And it was just $4,000 wheelchair in the back of the truck.
Yeah, trash.
Okay.
What was the layout?
Would they actually, you know, to move what's supposed to do and transport me in my wheelchair in Santa Rita? No. Chances are is that, you know, if I had been sick, I would be sitting in this wheelchair. I'd be sitting in the house, you know, hoping I can get a budget for me to death so I can actually get mobile. But it is entirely obvious to me that they are escalating tactics. They're getting frustrated and you're getting and running out of money. And these are things that we have to keep in mind. I've never seen trouble with this.
Right. She can get mad.
It's a pretty hard situation.
Thank you.
Hey.
Thank you, Mike. Let's take another question in the back.
Hi. I was just going to say, you know, at the level of the city's mentality, that if we're wondering why it has such a punitive and kind of excessive response to the occupation, just, I mean, say, like, that opens the room for them, is the adoption, right? And that brought down the mayor effectively from the point of view of the entrenched establishment. So they're from, in their mind, my own sense is they actually have kind of PTSD around it. We see it in San Francisco and Oakland, like when they make a discretionary choice to send people far away and to do that at other places, where I've also been in the culture of a lot of have, when they don't want you to come out quickly, right? Because it's far away, you know, and all of those things. Anyway, I just feel like the way that they justify that to themselves is through pursuing things like emergency shelter ordinance, having cost-shed villages, and things like that, which don't remotely or not blocking whatever it is. You know, that combination obviously doesn't really make a dent, you know, in terms of the scope of the need, right? But for them, that gives them, in terms of their moral perspective, the license to kind of even be excessive, right? And come down on, you know, encampments in the station, or whatever, in spite of all of the things that Steve said and all of the amazing analysis said. So I just want to put that out there, just like recognizing where their own sort of like, well, not sort of, but kind of correct, totally correct, point of view is coming from what's motivating them to do that. I expect it's probably that. You know, they don't want to have another occupied, or they just thought as materially impacted.
I think what's also threatening to them, and there's also this level of prejudice, because there is an ongoing tension, for lack of a better word, between whatever is associated with the village and this administration. They literally have never forgiven us for creating the first village and for shaming them for doing nothing for this housing crisis, or housing affordability crisis, and homelessness crisis. And they don't like the fact that we won't go away, and that we keep on getting louder and bigger. And I think part of shutting us down, I agree, you know, it was very reminiscent of Occupy. Many of us here were like leaders in Occupy, actually. And I think a bigger thing is that we could not succeed because, one, we would have told the public the truth. Something to say that once the rain goes away, we're planning to be back out there. We may or may not have tents, we shall see, but what we will have is our info booth, and what we will have is flyering, and what we will have are the open mics that we have scheduled and the movies we have scheduled every night on Landless People's Struggles. So once this rain stops, we're gonna be back out there. We're not stopping, we're still gonna stick with our goal. The public needs to know the truth. And what we saw when we were out there is the public really wanted it, engaged with us. People like stop. This was on a Sunday. On a quiet Sunday, we had the clouds of profit, you know, profit. People wanted to talk about how what was happening with homelessness. People are mad. They know that what's happening is not right, but they feel like they have no agency. And so we're not gonna stop. It's our duty. It's our duty to continue to push forward because we know the truth. And I think part of it too to shut us down was to send a message to all the other unhoused folks. Don't you dare speak up. Don't you dare think you've got rights. And she, you know, this administration got another thing coming, but they think that unhoused folks and Oakland are going to be quiet.
Especially with our tax dollars. It's not their money, it's our money. We work hard, We pay our taxes and we do everything any other citizen does. But when you use our tax dollars against us, to abuse us, that's where the problem is.
I see three hands below Kim, the gentleman in the middle, and then Nell.
Hi, I'm Kim King. Some of you know me. I've been unhoused and challenged for 2013. I want to be invisible. I also noticed coming up to the 60s that I've never seen an escalation like this. And I feel invisible as well. This denial. However, as a contributor to Land Action, I've been working with ACT-CHANNELS for the past 3 years, trying to implement the sustainable cable as our low-cost solutions. And interestingly enough, to dovetail on a community comment, because I've never seen that kind of collectivism come happen, which is why I showed up last Sunday, the Sunday before, is that there was a program, there were 60 minutes last night, actually, covering homelessness in Seattle. And one of the, even though I didn't agree with everything that was and how it was broadcast, community was the main operative that I hope resonated with a lot of the other folks. I've also been collaborating with your mayor for almost two years now, trying to help them come up with some solutions. But what I understand is that the city's back is against the wall. And I think that's why we've seen this escalation. And I have some ideas and solutions and operators and actually a colleague who will be in front of the governor soon to get this arrested, because although I agree that there needs to be activity in the front that you're in the manner that you all are in, there also need to be fixing the solution. And I actually have some meetings tomorrow with the city. And I'm going to put them together because to follow up on the operating business, this is about business. So the solutions I've been putting forward for the past 5 years are high revenue generating scenarios, but they are revenue generating whereby they can take stress off the municipality and earmark these funds for getting people housed. One thing I would challenge this group to do is that I'm not sure, because I've been in and out of the area a lot the past few years trying to get solutions put forth because I couldn't get support here to do it, is that I know there's a meeting on the 4th, and I could comment on one of the items. And one of the things that's common sense to me, and I'm hoping someone brought it up, and hopefully it hasn't fallen on deaf ears, but I understand when they say they arrest and they offer shelter, I understand why someone would not want to stay in shelter, believe me. And I feel like the media fails miserably on many points why people are denying going into the shelter. So I would ask you, compel, which is what I'm going to make for the world up in my meeting tomorrow, is that we've got this money and that people complain that the shelters are sanitary and safe, yada yada. Why are you earmarking funds for people that would like to take the opportunity to go into a shelter temporarily and additionally and fortify these shelters so that people don't want to go and be a part of that? And I have a whole list of other bullet points that I'm going to give away because I'm hoping, because of this escalation, because of this desperation in this point, that what I have to propose will actually resonate, and of course I will enlighten you all as to what we can do and exact, hopefully sooner than later, because I'm horrified that people are getting out of the concrete still. And the fact that it's escalated, because I raised way back in 2014, District 3 Councilwoman's Chief of Staff and her community council person, I said, this isn't bad now, but it's going to get really bad when here's where we are. We have ways to fix this. Indeed, they've fallen on deaf ears, but hopefully we're at a point of juncture in time. And they can be challenged to actually invoke these constructive, sustainable solutions. And I'll do my best to make that happen.
Thank you. And the gentleman right there.
I just wanted to mention that when we were out of Santa Rita during the bail bonding process, the bail bondsman, when we were dealing with Anthony Montemayor, said, what is this? What are these charges? Is this cyclical offenses?
Right.
That was him. I mean, I figured, just throw it into that. That's when someone who does a lot of, and sees a lot of And I mean, when I heard that it was 5 months ago, I thought Libby Sheff is haunted by the specter of occupation. And I agree with other people when they said that. I think that they saw this as a seed.
Right.
Because the crisis is at a breaking point. And it could very quickly go that way. For them to come down that way, I mean, just outlandish, outrageous.
She was mad it was in front of those cameras. That's what the problem was. It, everything is fine until media is involved. Because you know what? She's already being reflected on other things. Her money handling and the way she treats her citizens. So this is just another blow to her administration. So of course, we're going to be punished for throwing that blow.
Also, the first people that were arrested were people not in tents, but people knowing what was happening.
So she jailed media. That tells you right there.
Yeah. I like to say this when we go too far. This needs to be brought into language. A lot of people don't understand. We keep saying gentrification, we keep using these names going around. I keep hearing a lot of people talk about the government needs to do this, you know. Really, the people needs to do it.
Right.
We're in the back of the state where we don't tell our government what we need, what needs to be done, and then it's voted in or the next person running for office promises it gives it to us. We're at a point where outside contributors, corporations, and sometimes even foreign governments come to our government, come into our cities, you know, and through their lobbying, you know, they allow for change in the laws, and we find those laws to be oppressive, and then we got to fight tooth and nail to get them removed. When it comes to this government, they make no doubts about it. If you come to any metropolis area, it's going on everywhere. These areas are being sold. They're money generators. They do need the Corps to be there so they can excuse the misallocation of funds and everything else. But mainly, they're selling the city to whatever the next new corporate game or new economic status quo is to be. You know, they're selling it to Google to other companies coming out, and they're allowing for the raising rents because they don't want to open it. You know, they don't care about the culture. No colonizer has ever colonized anybody, you know, with the best intentions and thoughts and ideas of the colonized. And that's basically what's going on in it is the point of society in all of America. If we don't wake up and be, this government cannot and have never done anything for us, you know? At best, we've had a chance, and we've, I guess, the white people, you know? Let me speak for myself. You know, there's been a way that they've had, you see things being turned, overturned for the betterment of the community. I've never seen that anymore. I've always seen people come together and to make amends and fill in the gap for the government, either one allow it or they fail to do so and help the main people. And we really need to stop. You know, this is the government for the people by the people, but this too grand, these cities, our communities, those villages, you know, these are places that we the people take hold of and take control of. And we need to go back to that and let the government rewrite whatever they need to rewrite to allow it to continue to exist. Right now, and that's what they're doing. They're fighting styles. And anybody who wants to go against corporate gang is off their premises, not the people. So we really need to get that solid in our mind.
And this is the best time to get it solid in your mind, because it's election time. This is the best time to keep things moving, because they don't know which way to win the vote. But they also need help and support, too. So this is our best time to demonstrate what we want as a people before we can elect a new government. So this is our best time to take action.
Hello, my name is Nell Meinand, and I am an organizer with the Corporate Family International Call for Moral Revival. And I want to just appreciate you all for putting yourself at risk and being arrested, because I happen to be housed now, but I had a stint of homelessness after being foreclosed on by Chase Bank in 2013, and I'm still at risk because I'm in the group, the elders group, which is one of the fastest growing groups of homelessness in the country. And so I have two questions. One question is, where are you in terms of the legal case? Do you have arraignment dates or court dates, or what's happening there? And then what kind of support do you need from the community?
We're working with the NLG for these criminal charges that we have on us and the citations that we have on us.
think, yeah, we're letting NLG support that, putting together a calendar so that we'll let the community know the dates in multiple dates. They didn't put us all on one date, they spread us out over 3 months. So, which is a lot, you know, that, I think that's all purpose too, because
yeah,
that's a lot of time and resources to do court support over a 3 month period.
I think the majority are 24th and 26th of December, but I'm not sure if
it's
more than that.
Yeah, from January to throughout January. And speaking of court dates, so because of the city's practices, we now have 5 different encampments that are suing the city of Oakland. And 3 of those encampments are still standing. And they're suing them on the 4th, 8th, and 14th Amendment, as we've been, you know, pushing throughout this protest. One particular encampment, the first encampment to file a lawsuit with Housing and Community Village, and we also filed a First Amendment lawsuit with that, because that was also a protest camp. But there is many more lawsuits to come. And we as the USDs will also be filing a civil rights lawsuit against the city of Oakland as well for this latest transgression.
Well, let me just say that it would seem that now is a good time to start leaning on Nancy O'Malley to drop charges. There's no reason even to wait. You know, to just start demanding immediately that the charges be dropped. That's ridiculous.
Steven's hands was up. That's not talking to him about that.
Yeah, I just want to remind people that Occupy Wall Street in Oakland, the people that held it down when all the people were gone was primarily unhoused people. You know, because I mean, all the house people would leave at night and go home, and then come back and talk about stuff, and then leave. But it was the unhoused people who were the backbone of that, and those were the people that took down Gene Quad.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's right.
I think it's really important to visualize that and remember that our movement is like, this is the core people who are going to be the ones to take down Louis Schaaf. And Louis Schaaf is scared for a reason, because she saw that, and like, it wasn't just, I don't think it was just PTSD, I think it was an actual strategic assessment of a threat to her administration.
And karma.
Because it's not irrational, like, it's not an irrational fear. And I just wanted to make that comment.
Thank you.
Talia.
Hey everyone, my name's Talia. I'm part of a homeless advocacy working group. And I just wanted to make sure that folks knew about a policy that a bunch of us have been working on, that Nikki Fortunata Bass, our new council person for District 2, pushed through. One piece of that policy is that there's currently an audit of the encampment management team in Oakland going on. So it's really important that all of us are paying attention and documenting when the city's policy of how they're supposed to be, or how they say they're supposed to be engaging with encampments, when they're not following those policies. Tomorrow is an opportunity for us to have our eyes out there. There's an eviction happening between 16th and 18th on Kirkham. I'll be there starting at 8:45 in the morning, and I encourage folks who are able to please come and join me to both bear witness, to document, and to support unsheltered folks who are going to be forcibly evicted tomorrow in the rain and the cold. So please come and join if you're able to.
Yeah, I would add that the documentation of what the city is doing is crucial. For the lawsuits, for helping change practice, for holding them accountable. If folks have not yet already joined our emergency alert text system, if you text the word HOMES now, all one word, all capital letters, to 797979, you will be part of the alert system, which will let you know when there's eviction and what support is needed. We'll let you know when there's eviction and resistance. We'll let you know when there's an action or a protest or a meeting. Also, this Wednesday, we're asking folks to pack this meeting of Life Enrichment Committee, which Nikki Fortuna Voss sits on, which is where this recommendation and report that Talia speaks of, who speaks of, originated, is having a special meeting just to talk about homelessness. And it's going to be interesting. But we're asking folks to sign up to speak, even if you don't plan on speaking, because the advocates we're planning to bring homeless folks from the encampment to speak. And so you can actually pass your time on to somebody from the encampment to speak, and they can get more time. Because you only get a minute to speak, which is nothing. But if enough house folks who don't want to speak sign up and pass on their time, you can give an unhoused person 5 minutes to speak their mind. So we really encourage people, you can sign up beforehand online, but you do have to be present to give your time.
It's at 5 p.m. Wednesday at City Hall.
My name's Wes. Wife recently is kind of homeless advocate myself. I was curious about sticking and staying in your three encampments, registering to vote. Have you really tried doing that as well? Because you can track from one encampment to the next and kind of go, hey, feds, the city's picking on me, and this is how often. And you get a homeless voting block is what I'm looking at. A few days, this is what we need. We need permanent permission to be somewhere. Hopefully indoors, preferably, take over the building or something. But the registered vote thing, I think, is really huge, especially if you want to be really living and be collar. And I know that's hard to do, getting people motivated to want to register for anything.
Right.
But I seriously think, if you're going to be important, and especially if you already signed up on all these other continuing cares, registering to vote and putting your description of where you're at, it says, this is my place, I'm staying, I'll go to jail for this, And that, I think, and I'm a voter, which I think scares a lot of the officials.
Right. Speaking of voting, we actually have a recall effort where you can put, if you're a registered voter of Oakland, California, you can sign up for the recall effort. We're in our first initial stages of it, but we're going to start pushing that initiative as well. So that way, the next time she decides to drive and leave people off the land that we pay taxes for, she'll be held accountable. Mm-hmm. So if you guys have any time, please sign us in.
I'd like to say this, not only in response to that, of course, what you said, was spoken earlier, whenever they do close encampments, it is of the utmost importance that non-house people and other people show up. Actually, I've seen on the campus where a lot of people who didn't want to fight for their rights were used to just being shuffled around, still allowing that to take place. Whenever it comes to the more people show up, the more numbers are there visibly supporting them, it gives those people a little bit more, a little bit more sense of themselves, a little bit. Some of them actually, even in their broken state, they're willing to stand up and fight back, sign on the lawsuit. So that is really the utmost importance, because you know the man needs to be invited, and we're all one people. We're all human, and we need to get out there. Even if just show your presence, I've seen that kind of slow down and help them to go a little bit slower and not rip people's lives together so rudely like that. So that's very important, showing up. Even if you don't know what to do, show up.
Especially when you document, because they run. Sometimes they just skip it, like the where you go with the camp.
Social media, just come show some pictures and send it to other people, so those of them. Isn't that like what they said? It is literally written smile by the heart. When they clean up the camp.
And that's why we challenge them. The facilities they try to place the unhoused in, we're challenging them to go stay a night there with their friends, family, and children. Let's see if you can survive one night there, and then maybe we'll pay attention.
Any other more questions? We want to thank you guys.